Thank you for joining us on the Ultimate Leadership Podcast. And here's your host, Chris Sabalero.
Well, by that old clock on the wall, once again, it's time for the Ultimate Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Sabalero. You know, sometimes when we bring you these shows, they really kind of have a theme. And we kind of talk about different things from ethical leadership to how to become a great speaker and how to recognize in your leadership strengths and faults. But, you know, sometimes it's good just to kind of have a guest on, just to kind of talk leadership and pick up a cup of coffee and put your feet on the desk and really just kind of talk around leadership. And our guest today is Robert Wilson. I got to tell you, I've been trying to get Rob on this show for almost a year. He is a captivating storyteller who has entertained audiences around the world. He creates stories for speeches, articles, fiction, and advertising. And he is an author of The Uncomfort Zone. It's an internationally syndicated column on achievement, innovation, and leadership that appears in Psychology Today and more than 400 other publications. Rob, I got to tell you, I'm glad that you finally got here.
Well, thank you for having me. It is just a pleasure to be here.
You know, so as we kind of talked about the show and kind of where we wanted to go, we just thought maybe just a kind of discussion overall about leadership and just an informal discussion about kind of how things, work within ourselves, how things work within our workplace. One of the things that I admire the most in you is that you're a humorist and you kind of do copywriting. How did you get into that, the process of being a copywriter, but more or less having that sense of humor that you can put into your work?
Well, I think the humor started when I was in school as probably a self-protective device, a way of dealing with getting, bullied by other kids. If you're funny, you didn't get bullied. And so I developed a sense of humor almost as a mechanism to just, keep myself from getting picked on.
Yeah, but one of those things, too, is that as you take that now into your professional career, though, it does become a specific niche that you have to kind of be funny in a way that isn't insulting or isn't, people are going to point a finger at. So how do you now hone that skill of being a humorist as you do your work? Because you've got some really great works that are out there that are really inspirational and inspiring, and they really kind of make you think. And I got to tell you, sometimes you get a chuckle or two out of it.
Well, the thing about humor is, for me, let me put it this way, as a speaker or as a writer, I'm not a comedian, so I get to sprinkle in humor here and there. And a lot of times you'll just see a situation that just invites a little bit of something you can make fun of. Most humor, if you want to be, shall we say, politically correct, is to be self-deprecating, make fun of yourself. Make fun of things that you've experienced, and if you pick up on the most universal things, then more people will find it funny than not. So you'll find that people can understand when you make jokes about bathroom humor. I mean, I've got a whole book on bathroom humor. I've got a illustrated collection of bathroom graffiti that I put into a book years ago. But that's just, throwing that out there, that tends to be a little more universal than others. But that is the problem with humor, is it's not universal. You might recall a commercial done by Jerry Seinfeld a number of years ago for American Express, where he's doing his routine in London and using American slang, and nobody's laughing. So yeah. Then he takes a tour of England and learns the lingo, comes back, and they laugh at his jokes.
Right. Yeah, I remember. So, in your role, you think about the stuff you write about. It's real world content. I mean, we talk about achievement. You talk about creative thinking, innovation. What inspires you to kind of get this information and kind of use it as a tool for growth?
Well, that's a lot of what it is. Every month I have to come up with what is basically going to be a fairly timeless article, because I have a number of publications that run it over a long period of time. Like, their publications right now just publishing my very first article, which I wrote 11 years ago this month. My very first article was for a banking magazine, and then I expanded to, you know, several hundred over the next few years. And I still have publications coming on board, and a lot of them want to start with the, you know, the first one rather than the most recent one. And so I have written them all these years to not be tied to any current events, so that, you know, they're still relevant. And so I try to tell stories that make a point, and the points I try to make are either points on achievement, on how you can motivate yourself, or perhaps a leadership article on how to motivate others, an article on how to be more creative, how to, you know, be more innovative, how to bring more innovation to your company, or how to bring more creative thinking into your personal life so that you get more satisfaction out of it. And then I go off on tangents where I write about bullying, just whatever amuses me. But one of the interesting things that you actually touched on when you asked the question was, a lot of times what I write about is something that I was dealing with that month. So a lot of times if you go back through and read them by date, you might have an idea of something I might have been struggling with at that time. Now, it may not be specific, the thing that I'm actually struggling with, but I'll write about on that topic area.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I got to tell you, man, sometimes that's the best therapy, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's, you know, I learn a lot in self-reflection, and a lot of times just putting it on paper helps me, you know, learn from it. I'm hoping other people can learn from it as well.
How about then your next article on an entertaining podcast host who's sometimes funny? We'll talk about that offline. But so, you know, Rob, you're also an author, and your book Off the Wall kind of originated with a prank. What was that about?
Well, it started back in college. I was coming out of a classroom. Oh, I'm going to guess back around 1980 to date myself here. And I saw a good friend of mine down the hall, and he was working with one of those old-fashioned pistol grip label makers. So I just walked down to say hello to him, and I saw that he was cranking out this label and then pasting it on the door. And I said, so Ken, what are you up to? And he says, well, I'm doing some work for the dean. He asked me to put the room numbers up in Braille on the door so the blind students can find their classrooms. And well, that got me thinking, because I went to Georgia State University, which is an urban campus in downtown Atlanta. And so all the buildings are clustered very close together, or used to be. It's grown a lot since I went there. And because of that, it was a relatively easy campus for blind students to navigate. And as a result, we had a number of blind students on campus, and I'd gotten to know a few of them. And as I'm watching Ken, well, what can I say? The devil got into me. And I looked at him. I said, Ken, does that label maker do just the numbers, or does it also do the full alphabet? He goes, it does the full alphabet. I said, good. Let's take that over to the Student Center men's room. Let's put some graffiti up in Braille. And so we did. And we put a couple of short ones. I still remember what we put up. We posted in this, you know, the vinyl labels, with the Braille. The one of them said, draft beer, not students.
And so
we posted that above the toilet paper dispenser in every stall.
That's hilarious.
And so the next day, we made a point of running into some of our blind friends, and I remember going up to guy Jimmy, and I said, hey, Jimmy, have you been keeping up with the graffiti that people are writing on the, or posting, putting up on the, I said, putting up. I said, if you're keeping up with the graffitis that the graffiti people are putting up in the Student Center men's room. And he gives me this look that's, he's pretty irritated. He goes, no, come on, Rob, why are you asking me that when you know I can't see it?
That's funny.
I said, well, next time you're in there, just feel above the toilet paper dispenser. And then I kind of snickered and walked off. Well, within 48 hours, every blind student on campus had heard about it, and they were after us.
That's funny.
To put up some more. They said, this stuff is great. And so Ken and I, it was not our intention to become the PC graffiti artist of Georgia State University, but we thought, well, let's go get some more. And so we, for inspiration, we hit the bars. And then one night we went to this really old bar that's still in Atlanta called Moe's and Joe's, and it's probably been there 75 years or more. And when we went there, it had a good 50 years worth of graffiti because they never paint the walls. And so every time we went to the restroom, we found something else we wanted to take back to school with us. So we started jotting them down on sheets of paper. And by the end of the night, we had filled up two pieces of paper crammed full of graffiti. And we kind of looked at that and we went, wow, we should just keep collecting this stuff until we have enough for a book. Because that's beer talking.
That's right. Some of the best inspiration, right?
I get totally inspired by beer.
You know, one of the things, just to cut your story off really quick, is that, you know, in my career, I was a paramedic, and we say that the best calls always start off with, watch this, hold my beer.
Yes.
So, sorry, go ahead, Rob.
That's a good one. So, we ended up going back to school and posting some more, and the school newspaper, wrote about it. And we thought that we could gather enough graffiti in about 4 weekends to create a book. And little did we know that that was not possible. We hit a lot of the bars around different college campuses in Atlanta. We hit the bathrooms on campus, and pretty soon we realized we were seeing a lot of the same thing over and over again. And we just didn't find enough to create a book. But I thought the idea was just too good to let go, to drop. And I said, Ken, let's just passively collect it. If we see something that makes us laugh or we think is clever, let's jot it down wherever we see it and just save them until we have enough for a book. And so over the years, we'd jot something down on a cocktail napkin or a matchbook cover or a business card or, you know, whatever piece of paper was handy, and just go home and throw it in a shoebox. 15 years later,
wow.
We finally had enough material.
That's
and
awesome.
Approached the publisher that had done Jeff Foxworthy's Redneck books, if you recall his
Yeah.
And so they were here in Atlanta, and I got the name of the senior editor over there from another guy I knew who had been published by them. And he said, oh yeah, give this guy a call. So I called him up and said, hey, I've got this idea for a graffiti book. And he said, okay, well, go ahead and send something to me. I said, well, I don't really have anything ready yet. I just wanted to know if you were interested. He goes, yeah, you know, I'd be interested in seeing something like that. So then I got serious and went out and sought out and started looking for an illustrator. Because I wanted, over the period of 15 years, my ideas of what the book should look like had changed dramatically. When we first conceived of it that night at Moe's and Joe's after two pitchers of beer, our idea was just to type up, you know, page after page of jokes, just basically typed up. But over the years, I saw a lot of other things that were funny in bathrooms where people had done funny little drawings. And I said, okay, I want to capture everything in the bathroom. I want fixtures. I want cracked tile work. I want cracked plaster work and tile work and all the fixtures. And I want to capture everything but the smell. And so we did. I found an illustrator who had a great sense of humor, Bob Salo. He has since passed away, but he was a funny, funny guy and brought a lot of humor in his illustrations to the book. And so that was it's a funny, funny book on many, many levels. It's
right.
Not just the graffiti. It's where we claim to have found it. It's Bob's little drawings and everything else. So it was just a fun thing to put together. It was a great time doing that, even though it took 15 years to get the material.
Regardless of how long it took, Rob, it is a hit. You know, so you know, I'd be amiss, though, if I didn't kind of tap into some of your expertise while you were here. It's, you know, it's fun that we get to hear the stories of, you know, how the book transpired. But, you know, you're very, very experienced when it comes to things like advertising, creative thinking, innovation, personal achievement, and so on. One of the things that I get from people a lot is when we talk about creative thinking and innovation, they seem to think that they don't have that attribute. I mean, it seems that as you want to grow the skill of creative thinking or become innovative, is there a way that we can do that? I mean, do we have that inside of us that we just need to tap into, or is that something that we've got to develop?
Well, absolutely. I have learned over the years that creativity is not a gift, as most people believe. And most people believe that because of the socialization process that we go through in growing up and going to school. We're constantly told to, you know, just really pretty much conform. And by the time we're adults, most people have repressed their natural creative abilities, and they believe that. They think that only some people, those few who have been able to retain the creativity through that onslaught of being told to conform all the time, are relatively few. And most of us, by the time we reach adulthood, believe that creativity is a gift that only some people get. But it is a skill, and it's truly a skill that anybody can regenerate at any point in time, at any age. You can learn how to re-stimulate that ability. And in my opinion, it's not just a skill. It's also a lifestyle.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's a good part of being a creative thinker, of being an innovator, is exposing yourself to new things. And that could be new experiences. It could just be new ideas. It could be, there's a lot of different ways that you can expose yourself to new things. But by doing so, you lay down new neural pathways in your brain. You literally open up new areas of your brain that otherwise wouldn't be open. I responded to a question this morning with a reporter who said, why should children take music lessons? I said, well, they should take music lessons because it will open up an area of their brain that otherwise would not be opened up. It will stimulate parts of their brain and create new neural pathways and give them more brain power at their disposal. Even if they never go on to use it, they will still have that, and you can use that to make new connections. And the more brain power you have, the more experiences you've had, the more different things you've known or exposed yourself to, gives you abilities to make different connections. And by connections, I mean basically, you know, innovation, coming up with, you know, putting two things together that nobody ever thought of before. And, you know, maybe coming up with a brand new invention or a new way of doing things.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting, though, Rob, is that sometimes people will be creative. Sometimes they have the thought of being innovative. You know, they have foresight, they have conceptualization, but they're afraid to bring that forward. How do you kind of get into that realm of saying, you know, now that I have an idea, I've got to feel comfortable with it to share it, even if it's not going to be successful?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, creative thinkers, or more truly innovators, are risk takers. They're willing to break the rules, and they're willing to go off in areas that's non-traditional. And you go, well, how do you do that? Well, you can start by taking baby steps. People who are innovators have been taking risks all their lives, and so they are comfortable with it. And if you want to get comfortable taking risks, you kind of have to start small. And, you know, you can do that in a number of different ways. Let me give you a couple of quick suggestions or for your listening audience, a couple of ways they can start, you know, doing things differently that will stimulate different parts of their brain and it will get them more comfortable with little baby risks. Here's a baby risk. If you always, let's say if you read the newspaper every day and you never read a certain section of the paper, like say you never read the sports section, read the sports section. Okay, that's something different and you're taking a risk. Well, here's another one. If you drink coffee every day, switch to tea for a week. People go, what? Not my morning coffee? Here's a huge one. It's not really huge. It's really little, but it will show you. It's one of the best ways you can demonstrate how routine your life has become is switch hands when you brush your teeth. That's the hardest thing I've tried to do.
Man, it would take me an hour.
Yeah, I will occasionally switch hands, and it is the hardest thing. I'm like, I can't get my teeth clean.
That's funny.
Or write something down. Start writing with your non-dominant hand.
Oh, my God, that's hard.
Little things that are like, that's a risk you're taking because, you know, it's going to, you're going to like, well, and it's a little baby risk. That doesn't really hurt anything.
Sure.
You know, you don't have anything at stake here. But truly, taking risk means there's something that you can lose.
Yep.
And so that's why you start getting comfortable with ones that, you know, that are little that you can do. You know, move one piece of furniture in your house and then go walk in the dark.
No, that's right. Kidding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's see how that
works. You know, you move one piece of furniture, it throws you for a while. You walk out of a room and you go, what's wrong? Oh, yeah, I moved that chair.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I in my office, I moved a mirror that was behind me. So as I was talking on the computer, I actually saw the back of my head in the mirror. And I'm like, well, that doesn't look very good, you know. And but then I moved the mirror to a different wall. But I can't get used to the fact of, you know, every time I get up to look at my appearance, I'm like, it's not there anymore. But it does. It takes you a long time to get used to the change. So, you know, one of the other things I want to go ahead and tap into your expertise on is, you know, personal achievement. And when we think about our growth as leaders, you know, we need to try to become experts in our field and, you know, kind of bring our expertise forward. And but in your experience, what is the secret to the success of having a personal achievement that really kind of helps you grow the best that you can and maybe have some impact on your professional success?
Well, the thing that achieving things, even just little small achievements, and I think it's a great idea to keep a journal of these little achievements we have every day, you know, little accomplishments that we make, you know, kind of pat yourself on the back and you write it down, because a lot of times we forget a lot of these little things we do, and it's great when you read back through them and you go, well, you know, maybe I'm not as big a schlub as I thought I was. You know, so a lot of times we have self-talk in our head where we beat ourselves up, and that's one of the first places to correct. Stop the self-deprecating talk in your head. But the other thing is these little achievements build up, because there's this thing called self-efficacy, and that's where we become, we start developing self-confidence in our abilities to do more and more. And so with each little success, we develop a little more of this self-efficacy. And we can develop this in four ways. And that's one of the ways, is by doing and achieving. But another way is we can do it. We can develop self-efficacy by observing other people who are accomplishing what we want to accomplish. And if we see some of the people that are doing it, we'll go, wow, if all these people can do it, surely I can do it too. Or if that guy can do it, man, I should be able to do it. That kind of thing. Another way is encouragement from others. And this is where if you're a manager or a parent, you can really do a great deal of help, give a great deal of help and benefit to your employees or your children by praising them and then telling them that you believe they can do it. I wrote about this in my column once. I mountain bike occasionally, and it's one of my favorite forms of kind of fun and exercise. And on the mountain bike trails, they have all these little obstacles, and one of the obstacles was a seesaw that you would ride your bike over. And I would ride past this thing and go, I'd love to try that, but I'm not going to try it until I see somebody do it. And then finally one day I'm riding and the guy does it. I see him up ahead on the trail and I see him go up over it. So I hurry up and catch up to him and I said, hey, I just saw you go over the seesaw. I've been wanting to do that. Can you tell me how to do it? Because I saw you do it, but is there any trick to it that I need to know? And he goes, yeah, yeah. He says, you want to get up enough speed, but right as you hit the center, you want to brake just a little bit so that the seesaw tips down and you go down and it doesn't become a ramp with you flying off the end of it. And I said, well, that's what I needed to know. Can I see you do it one more time?
And that's
so
right.
He did it one more time. I watched it and then I tried it and I did it just perfectly on the first try. But I had been wanting to do that for quite a while, and finally I got one, the instruction I needed, and I got to see somebody do it. So I felt like, okay, I can do this now.
Man, that's, I got to tell you, Rob, it's been awesome just sitting. I can't believe we're already to our time that where the show is over. And you got to promise that you come back so we can finish some of these stories. But, you know, you do speaking, you know, you do some writing. And, of course, your book is, you know, a great reference for people to enjoy and laugh about. If folks want to engage with you, if folks want to find out about your book, what's the best way they can do that?
Well, they could go to one of my websites. My writing website is called robwilsondirect.com. So three words or my name plus direct, robwilsondirect.com. And then I have another website for my speaking business, which is called jumpstartyourmeeting.com. So four words run together, jumpstartyourmeeting.com. And they can, you know, find my, from there, there's links to my column on Psychology Today. Or they could go find my author page on Amazon.com. I have, you know, four books. I have, you know, two fiction books and one, you know, one of them's a children's book, which is very fun. It's a humorous book about two kids who are bullied by a ghost. By a ghost kid, actually. The name of the book is called The Annoying Ghost Kid. And there's no one to help them. They're the only ones who can see this ghost who's bullying them. And so they can't turn to the adults. They can't turn to their friends. And they have to figure out how to deal with the bully on their own. So it's very empowering as well as funny. So it's a funny read for kids. And it also shows them how to think on their own feet, do some problem solving, and stand up for themselves.
I got to tell you, Rob, it's been great that you're here, and let's not make it another year before you come back to the show.
Yeah, let's do it. It's been a great, great morning, and thanks so much for having me on.
And for everybody out there, man, sometimes you just got to find the humor and learn the art of storytelling, and we all have it in us. We just got to be able to feel comfortable with it. I want to thank Rob Wilson for joining us on the Ultimate Leadership Podcast, and for everyone out there, I want to thank you for joining us, and I look forward to chatting with everyone again real soon.
Thank you for joining us. The Ultimate Leadership Podcast is a production of ChrisSobolero.com. You can interact with us by email at ultimateleadership16@gmail.com. All rights reserved.